Hi, this is KGVM 95.9 on your dial, or you can stream us at kgvm.org. This is the Men's Network Radio, every Thursday night, 7 to 8 p.m. I'm James Goslick, your host. Last week we had part one of an interview with Gary Rowe. Gary is a grieving specialist, speaker, author, and he did a beautiful PDF that you can get on his website, GaryRowe.com, about seven principles to help get us through this COVID-19 crisis. But it's more than just that. It's just something you can practice in everyday life. And we covered topics about grieving in the first part, and then we covered two of the seven principles in part one, which was pursuing calm and nurturing your heart. Tonight we'll cover the rest of the principles and maybe a little bit more. So sit back, relax. This is part two of the Gary Rowe interview. Let's go to principle three. You know, it's and this is something that this is the thing I'm working on in 2020. This is my January 1. What do you call that?
A resolution.
Resolution. Reacting less and responding more.
Oh, boy.
And I can really relate to this because it is my main course of self-work for 2020. So how does that work? I need the answers.
I tell you, James, this is, first of all, I think every guy who's listening, we should be nodding our heads going, yep, I need to pursue calm. I don't have that enough in my life. Yep, I need to protect and nurture my heart. But this one especially, I think all of us can identify with, yeah, I need to react less and respond more. First thing we need to know is that we do have reflexes. We have physical reflexes, right? The doctor, you know, hits us in a certain place and whoop, there it goes, right? It's a reflex. It is natural and it is automatic. In fact, if we don't have a reflex, it's trouble. So in the same way, we have emotional and mental reflexes to the things that happen to us and around us, to the things that we hear, to the things that we see on media. You know, we can't unhear or unsee anything. And so when we hear or see something or experience something, we all have an initial, automatic, natural reflex. You can't stop the reflex, so don't bother even trying. However, after that split second reflex, then we're into what I call choice land. we're now in the territory where we can choose now that we've had our reflex, which is or whatever the case might be, or oh no, or oh shoot, or whatever it is. Now that we've had our reflex, we can choose whether we're going to simply react or whether we're going to respond. Reaction is pretty much an unthinking, whatever comes to mind, we just kind of do it. And 90% of the time we end up going later, oh, why did I do that? Oh, that was, I want to take that back. Can I reel that fish back in? You know, what can I do there? But, you know, you can't take the toothpaste off of that toothbrush once it's on there. You know, it's already out there. So how do we move from reacting to responding? First thing is to cut ourselves a break. I had a mentor in college that said, Gary, please remember in the future that it's not what you did that matters most now. It's what you do next. It's not what you did that matters most now because it's done. It's what you do next that matters most now. So what are we going to do next? So here's a scenario. Here's how it works. Some disturbing or confusing information comes at us, whacks us good. We're startled, you know, like to a sudden loud noise. And boom, fear and anxiety show up automatically sometimes. So what do? Pause. We just pause. Try not to go from reflex to reaction. And we take a moment and we pursue calm. Imagine that. we might actually breathe deeply. You know, we pursue calm, we breathe deeply. Whoever's waiting on a response can wait 5 seconds. They can wait 5 seconds. We might even acknowledge the disturbing feelings we're having, like we said before. Oh, boy, I'm thinking the worst here. You know, I'm anxious, I'm scared, I'm frightened, I don't like this. And then we begin to protect our hearts by releasing those thoughts and feelings, and we just let them pass on through. In other words, we acknowledge the reflex. It's automatic and natural. Okay, I'm upset here. I'm anxious. We acknowledge what's happening inside us. And then we begin to protect and nurture our hearts, tell ourselves what is true, and then let that pass on through. And the incredible good news about all of this, James, is that we are not at the whim of our circumstances. After the immediate reflex, which we can't control, nor can we control everything that comes at us. In fact, we control very little of what comes at us. After that initial reflex, we can indeed respond rather than react. That's good news, but we need to have patience with ourselves, because learning to do that is a skill that takes time, and we will fail often. Just say that, guys. I'm going to fail often. And, you know, I'm going to fail often at that, but we just keep failing forward. Just we just lean into it, and next time, the idea is over time, react less and respond more. Over time, react less, respond more.
Yeah, well, that's really good. I like the way you went down in steps, too, about checking your heart and everything, nurturing your heart, because it sounds like it's a good way to manage yourself when we're surrounded by other reactionary people. I mean, how can we, all of a sudden we get caught up in that, you know,
he's a lousy that, and I agree,
and next thing you know, or they're reacting to something that I might have said, and then next thing I know, you know, our beliefs or whatever are clashing. So we want to,
yes,
all of a sudden, I want to defend myself, and therefore I might react. So how do you manage all of that? Sounds like you covered it, but.
Well, it's, you know, and the other thing to remember here is reacting is always about the smaller picture. It's always about what's happening in front of you right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you can pause and back up and ask yourself, stop, what's the bigger picture here? Response is almost always about the bigger picture. Reaction is always about the smaller picture. So if you can make the transition between, when I get anxious, upset, frustrated, or angry, if I can take a moment, breathe deeply, pursue calm, then ask myself, okay, what's the bigger picture here? That can really help us. At least that really helps me. Big picture versus small picture.
Yeah. Well, that's really good. And I like the way everything's starting to intertwine on these principles. Or, you know, you've got something to reference to. Being calm.
It really does hang together.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So do we have a positive affirmation for Principle 3?
We do indeed, and it is simply, I will practice reacting less and responding more. Okay. Practice, because none of us is going to get it perfect. It's just, you know that old phrase, practice makes perfect?
Yeah.
No, it does. No, it doesn't. But anyway, practice does make permanent, however.
Oh, I like that. That's a nice switch.
Practice makes permanent.
Yeah.
So, much as we practice medicine, you know, we don't have that down perfectly,
yeah,
not by a long shot, but we're learning all the time because we're practicing.
Yeah.
So practice reacting less, practice responding more.
All right. We'll go to principle number 4, which is pursue personal wellness. So in here you talk a lot about the diet and how does a healthy diet and exercise help when you're grieving. And, you know, you mentioned a little bit, especially with the exercise in the early part of your life, how that really helped you, you know, not be in total depression.
Yes. Yes. Because my diet certainly wasn't helping me.
I guess you like chocolate cake.
At that particular time, being a North Texas boy, everything was meat and potatoes for me. But of course, when you're swimming 4 hours a day and you're a teenager and you're a guy, you can eat anything you want anyway.
Yeah, right.
But, yet, you know, personal health and wellness, you know, if you're immersed in the midst of the crisis and you don't pursue that, if you don't pursue personal wellness, it's just a matter of time till this thing takes you down.
Sure, because, I mean, you could relate this a lot to addiction or alcohol or whatever.
Yes.
All this, you're grieving. You're in this midst of grieving. You get into the deep depression. You haven't really checked in with all these feeling words that you gave us earlier, you know. And what happens?
Yep.
You just let everything go downhill, you know.
That's right. And we all know stress suppresses the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And so a significant intense stress over time does begin to affect us physically. We have an entire long list of diseases that are stress related, and a host of other relational ills that are stress related. But the key, if we can just think about this as, you know, I'm going to do the best job I can given the circumstances to, instead of garbage in, garbage out, put some good stuff in, you know, nutrition-wise. I'm going to recognize that 75% of the population, they say, is walking around dehydrated. So I'm going to do my best to get the liquid and the electrolytes that I need. It's amazing the physical symptoms that dehydration produces that most of us just live with. Because we just think, oh, I'm just getting a little older. Or we think, well, I'm just having a tough time with that, or whatever. So nutrition, hydration, exercise. Another good thing that we need in crisis, you know, when we're grieving too, because that is certainly a crisis, is medical support in our back pocket, is what I call it. In other words, hopefully most of us have one doctor we can call, you know, that kind of knows us. And if we don't, we don't. And there are situations that, you know, that's growing to be less and less the case in our world. But if we have a primary care physician and we know we're in crisis and we know we're grieving, I actually recommend people call their primary care physician. They don't have to talk to him or her. You know, they'll get the lovely voicemail that says, would you like to leave a message for your doctor's nurse? That's the one you want. You press that button and you just say, you know, I just wanted to let Dr. Stevens know that I am kind of in the midst of a personal crisis because I'm experiencing this loss. And I just wanted to give him a heads up. I don't need anything right now, but I just wanted him to know. That's huge, because if you go in later, then he can reference that. And our doctors today, they're smart. They now get the connection. This was not the case 10 years ago, but they now get the connection between grief and exacerbated physical symptoms, phantom sicknesses and diseases. I say phantom. They're real, but they're really coming from our stress level and grief rather than from some physiological problem that needs to be corrected, if that makes sense.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I kind of have a warped sense of humor sometimes, but this, when the crisis started out, we were talking with a friend, and we happened to the liquor section, the alcohol section, and the toilet paper bleach section, and this one refrigerated part for health food section all happened to be in this one corner of the store, right?
Oh, my goodness.
And we're talking to this friend, and the store is packed, and people are coming out with the toilet paper and stuff, and you know, we're picking some health food. And the humorous thing was here comes a whole bunch of people in and out, with their six-pack of beer and chips.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, okay, well, that's how we're going to deal with the crises, right?
Yes. You know, and that's just like us. This is why we have to make these intentional, somewhat uncomfortable decisions. Because, let's just be honest, most of us would prefer to eat chips and ice cream through this thing.
Yeah, well, when it gets to the end of a day and it's like if I sit down and I'm thinking, oh, this has been an exhausting day and, oh, my God, I had so much coming at me. Well, the first thing I'm going to do is crack open a beer and sit down and relax, you know.
Yes.
Oh, this will help me go to sleep, you know.
Yes.
I mean, that's just an old habit.
It is an old habit. I mean, these are things that we have trouble working on when things are smooth and easy, you know, much less when we are in crisis. But I will say this, you know, when we're in crisis and grieving, that's when we really need our physical health to hold up. And so that above all times is the time to do what we can, okay, just what we can. A little progress is huge progress in nutrition, hydration, exercise, and seeking the medical, mental, and spiritual support you might need. Whoever you pursue to get that support, we need support across the board in times of crisis.
Yeah, that was going to be my next little topic I want to cover here, because you mentioned about spiritual support, which you just did, as a gateway to personal health and wellness. So, you know, what would you think if someone, or what would you recommend to someone who thinks any of kind of spirituality is hogwash?
Well, you know, good question there. I would say that people who really think any kind of spirituality is hogwash, that it would be difficult for you to pursue spiritual support if, you know, of course, if that's something that you don't really believe in. So I would say, this is kind of funny, I'm backing up to your heart here, it's not funny, but take a deep look into your heart and ask yourself the question, what do I need? What do I need during this time? And pay attention to the answer that your heart gives you. Someone once said, I wish I knew who it was, but I don't, and it's probably centuries old now, and it is, there are two main ways of looking at human beings. One way is that we are physical beings who sometimes have some spiritual experiences. Another way to look at us is we are fundamentally spiritual beings who right now are having this particular physical experience. And there are plenty of people who are in both of those, I mean, one or other of those camps and that go back and forth. So the key thing, I think, if you believe that all spirituality is hogwash, you know, number one, I would challenge you a little bit to stay open-minded and to recognize that there might be some pretty spiritual people out there that you can learn from in this time, because, you know, we all have this amazing brain, right? And one of the tasks of our brain, working together with our heart, is to listen to any particular person, and we do this all the time naturally, and with everything they say, we say, yep, that's for me, nope, that's not for me, yep, that there's for me, nope, that's not for me, yep, that's for me. You know, we ferret through information, and we glean what is helpful to us, right? I mean, that's kind of what we do in the midst of conversation. It's what we do when we read books. It's what we do when we listen probably to radio shows like this. We recognize, you know, not everything is going to hit me. I'm not necessarily going to buy into all this stuff, but I'm trusting that there's something out there and some stuff that's going to be helpful to me, and I'm going to take that and use it for my benefit and for the benefit of those around me. So if you believe that spirituality is hogwash, I would just say, if we can all recognize and humble ourselves, and this would be true for someone who's very spiritual, that we don't know it all. We don't know it all. And so let's all stay open, keep a part of our hearts open, and listen to our hearts, and seek stuff that we know is good for us, whatever that might be.
Well, I'm really glad that you went in that direction, because when you first said, well, let's take a look, what's in your heart? You know, take a look at what's in your heart. What do you want now? And the first thing that crossed my mind is I want to be cared for.
Uh-huh.
And then when you, as you were talking and I was thinking about that, you know, I was picturing when I'm ill, when I'm sick, I want to be cared for. I mean, I get like a little baby, and
yes.
and it's beautiful, because, you know, if I've got somebody there, my wife, for instance, I'm lucky, fortunate, who is giving me soup or medication or whatever, you know, there to, you know, get the hot bath going or whatever. It's really nice. My thought
wow.
goes to Mother Teresa, for instance,
uh-huh.
you know. How, you know, you get into the service and caring for other people, and there's a great support system. And out of that, all of a sudden, how can you not believe that we're interconnected somehow spiritually with a greater force outside
yes.
of us? Yeah. So,
yeah.
We got an affirmation for principle four?
Yes, another very simple one. I will pursue personal wellness.
Yeah.
And here's the beautiful part. That's just not about me or about you. That's about everybody else around us.
Yeah.
The healthier we are, the more the people around us benefit automatically.
Yep, absolutely. And for all those that love to cook out there, all you men, not a better way than to keep your family healthy by cooking up healthy dishes. So let's go to number five. And Gary, this show is definitely running overtime. It's going to be a two-part show, if you don't mind continuing.
It is your show, brother. I defer to you.
All right. Well, if you don't mind, we'll go on to number five. Pursue your purpose. You know, I mentioned I do some yoga, and I follow, relate to a yoga practice. And one of the teachers that I follow says often is, if you have a purpose, you have a mission. And you touch on this topic, you know.
Yes.
So how did you find your purpose and pursue your mission?
Oh, good question.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes our greatest pain in life really influences or ends up influencing our mission and purpose. So for me, when I was 16 and I said, okay, I'm gonna focus on healing and growing from all this stuff that has happened, and I'm gonna find a way to take the hits of life and use them as fuel for good somehow. If I can't do that, what's the point? So that kind of became my mission and purpose. And then as I progressed through high school and into college, I discovered that began to morph into myself healing and growing and helping other people heal and grow. Because, you know, sometimes like attracts like, you know, the affinity. People who have had stuff happen who are looking to heal and grow tend to find each other. And so then that further morphed into being a pre-med student in college. And I was pre-med all the way up to my fourth year, was just about to take the MCAT, and I got very uncomfortable. I don't know how to describe it. I got very uncomfortable with that direction. My grades were good. I was prepared, you know, all that was in place. But the end result of that, to make a long story short, is that I decided I would rather deal with the heart. By that, I mean not the physical heart, the heart rather than people's bodies. I know the two are connected, but in terms of which one do I really want to focus on, it was the heart. And so that really launched me into an adult life of helping hurting, wounded people heal and grow. Now, that's a part of my mission and purpose. For me personally, as a follower of Jesus Christ, I could say my priority in life, I'm lousy at living it sometimes, but my priority in life is having close, intimate fellowship with Jesus Christ. Because if I do that, then all the other stuff happens naturally, including helping hurting people heal and grow. So, you know, I have a book out there called Difference Maker, Overcoming Adversity and Turning Pain into Purpose Every Day. It's available on Amazon. You can download a free excerpt from my website. Again, it's Difference Maker. The purpose of that book is to really persuade everyone to know that you are a difference maker, period. You were born a difference maker. The only thing left is what kind of difference are you going to make? And that comes down to knowing, discovering really your heart and your personal mission, whatever that is. And that's what that book is all about, is helping people discover their personal mission. So the way that came about for me was someone came to me and asked me, well, Gary, what's your one thing? And I said, what? Well, what's your one thing? If you could boil all of life down to one thing that controlled all the other things, what would that be? That was a really challenging question for me, because I could have said, well, my life is about this and this and this and this and this and this and this. And I had no idea how fragmented and stressed I was trying to handle multiple priorities. You know, it's interesting, James, the original word, a priori, the word we get the word priority from, actually, up until the 1800s, that word was only singular. There was no plural for it. In other words, they knew, well, you can't have more than one of those. It's priority. You can't have two priorities. Then that's impossible. So what you have is one priority from which everything else flows. So I would challenge everyone listening today to ask yourself the question, what's your one thing? What is your priority? Because everything in your life is going to flow from that. And then, you know, what is it? What should it be? Blah, 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 blah. You know, most of us, if we look at our behavior and the decisions we make, can figure out, well, what am I living as my one priority right now? You know, is it making money? Is it being comfortable? Is it having X, Y, or Z? You know, whatever our behavior is directed towards, chances are that's what we really believe our one thing is. And chances are that one thing is not big enough. It's just not big enough. We need something so big, so large, that it encompasses everything else in life. Only then can we become, I think, the kind of purpose-driven, live-from-your-heart kind of men that this world desperately needs.
Well, that's really profound, because I know as I keep addressing this, if you have a purpose, you have a mission, and what is my priority, and it's a lot of times it seems really general for me.
Yes.
You know, and so then I bounce around from here to there, you know. Oh, is it going to be this talk show? Is this my mission? Well, I don't know, you know. Uh-huh. Is it, you know, I mean, I always go back to a certain thing about being on a homestead. Well, how does that, you know, what mission is that that helps other people? It does in a way, and I can get into it. We do a woofing program, but you know, I keep bouncing around with that. So it's really something to really think about. You know, I know you talk about crisis and self-absorption, and sometimes I feel self-absorbed into trying to figure out what my mission is. And I bounced around from one positive thinking workshop to the next, trying to figure that out. Spent thousands of dollars on it, you know. I got to tell you, what's hitting me right now is more than anything is making that connection with God. Let me be an instrument of thy peace, you know. I'm just a tool for you, to use.
Yes. You know, if we, you're right, James, it's really, sometimes our purpose and mission sounds very general. But if it's something like what you just mentioned, that I want to be connected to God and to be a pipe, I'll just call it a pipeline of His peace to the world and to other people. And you made that your purpose and mission that, well, you didn't make it that. You believe that's what it is. Yeah. So if that's what it is, then over time, that will greatly influence the way you think, the way you act, the way you speak, everything. And the same is true for all of us. And whatever we come up with, and we're not really coming up with it, we're really discovering what's already there. We're not making it up. We're discovering what's already there, buried deep in our hearts somewhere. Whatever our mission or purpose is, if life is all about people and relationships, then whatever our mission and purpose is, it will be about people. It will be about love. And it will be about service.
Ooh, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was my next topic. Because I just recently came across a reading, and I can't remember what it was, and in that it talked about how it takes courage to be fearless, overcome fear. Mm. And so I had some questions for you here written down. How can we gain courage? Is it through self-confidence or higher self-esteem? Or, you know, or do we have to work on our self-esteem or self-worth? And I got circled over here, love and serve, which is what you just brought up. And I like that because one of the shows I recently had earlier on this year was a Tom Cotton, and he was an addict. He was an addict for, and he's been clean for 42 years. And it all comes down to the 12 steps, but it all comes down, if you listen to that interview, is love and serve.
Yeah.
Service is the big key, he always told me.
Yeah.
So you want to explain that a little bit?
Well, it really, service, like nothing else, gets us out of our own heads. It connects us with other people and the bigger picture. You know, we've talked about going from the smaller picture to the bigger picture. Stay away from the smaller picture, go to the bigger picture. Service automatically helps us do that. It's just so powerful. When we are interacting with other people, when we are serving them, we automatically benefit. We receive by serving, I believe. And especially when we're grieving, what I tell people in personal individual sessions, in grief groups, online, etc., is whatever you do, find a way to serve during this time. I know your hearts are broken. I know you're barely putting one foot in front of the other, but you have to trust me with this. Find a way to serve other people during this time, because it will result in automatic healing and growth for you during this time. The same principle holds for when someone has surgery or someone breaks their leg or something like that and they heal a little bit. What's the first thing they send them to? Physical therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
They send them to exercise the muscle or the place that is hurt. And so people will tell you physical therapy hurts. I mean, they are hurting. Anyway, I think you get the point.
Yeah.
Is that especially when we're hurting, we need to be serving, because as we do, it gets us out of our own heads, out of those emotions for a little while. We all need a break from our own pain and our own problems and our own frustrations, and service is huge for that. And the other thing is, really quickly, you know, moving from fear to courage, one thing I would say is, whatever you do, don't say something like this: well, I'm never going to be afraid again. Well, good luck with that.
Hmm.
You know? In other words, don't focus on the negative. Don't try to never be afraid again. Instead, just serve people like crazy. just be courageous. Just practice courage. What does courage look like? Courage really looks like, instead of listening to all the messages being thrown at you, know who you are, know your own heart, and move forward in love and service. As you do that, you will heal and grow, and others will benefit. It is a win, 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 all the way around.
That's beautiful. And let's see, I'm guessing the affirmation on this one is love and serve.
It's pretty clear. I will pursue my purpose, love, and serve. I will pursue my purpose. How do I do that? By loving and serving.
That's beautiful. All right, so number six is promote peace.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and you know, without getting into politics or anything, since we're into the coronavirus pandemic, most of us being broadcast, this is the hysteria, the blame, the sensationalism, fear, reaction. You know, most of the stuff we've been discussing and wanting to change.
Yep, all of that helps us greatly, doesn't it?
Yeah. So how might you promote peace to those around you, especially during crises?
Yes. And that's, you know, right now is, I mean, in my community where I am, we are under shelter-in-place orders. So we get to go to the grocery store. We get to go pick up something at a drive-through or something like that. And that's it. That's really all we – anyway. So the way we're connecting and church services and everything else, everything is online. Everything is online. Everything is social media. And social media and online right now just seem to be a premier way to spread – blame and fear and anxiety and stir everybody up, etc. And we have to ask again, okay, if I am doing all of these principles, okay, I'm pursuing calm, I am protecting and nurturing my heart, I'm pursuing personal wellness as best I can, you know, and I am doing things that, you know, I'm trying to react less, I'm trying to respond more, and I am pursuing my purpose by loving and serving other people. Well, how can we love and serve other people the best? Well, at a time of upheaval, that's promoting peace. That's how. Now, how do you promote peace? Well, I think there are a lot of different ways, but the first thing is, it's difficult to give away what you don't have. So we're back to making sure you have enough peace to give some away. And I could explain how to do that, but I would just say, see previous principles. Because if you do all of those things and you're developing those habits in your life, then your peace will grow. It'll just kind of be automatic, so to speak.
All right, that's good.
We all need places to vent, and people are using social media as a place to vent.
Mm-hmm.
And the number one way to not promote peace is to blame someone else, stir something else up, try to fix somebody online, try to convince them of your point of view. That's never peace promoting. Even though you might be right, you know, take it up with them in a discussion format on Facebook Messenger or someplace, not openly online on their timeline or whatever the case might be. But we promote peace, I think, by speaking peace to others. Now, I wish I could define for you what that is, but I think we all smart enough and creative enough to come up with that for ourselves.
Well, sure, and this is huge because, you know, how might we cultivate a heart of peace in a relationship?
Yes.
In our personal relationships with others, with our loved ones. You know, and I think everything we're doing here is cultivating that heart of peace.
That really is.
Yeah.
And the thing to remember is that peace – is not the absence of conflict. Peace is not the absence of uncertainty. Peace is not the absence of difficulty. Peace is not the absence of pain. Peace is a deep sense of okayness. I know that's not a word, but I love making words up. Peace is a deep sense of okayness, that I am somehow okay no matter what happens to me or around me. Yeah. Now that's big. If we can get there, then, of course, we bounce in and out of that all the time. None of us are perfect. But the more of a sense of okayness we have with ourselves and with our relationships with God, the more we will naturally be able to promote peace to other people.
Yeah, there was a book I read way back when. That must have been in the 70s or something. I'm okay, you're okay. I don't even remember who wrote that. But it's just honoring the other individual, honoring who they are, respecting who that person is, what they're working through, whatever.
Yes, because people who are in grief and in crisis, they're in what I call limbo land. Life isn't what it was, but they don't know what life will be yet. They know it's not going to be forever like it is now, or they hope not, because they're in crisis, right?
Right.
But they know what it was, and they long for the good old days, maybe. But they look ahead and go, oh my gosh, what is this going to be? And so they're stuck in limbo land for a period of time. And what limbo, people who live in limbo land, what they need are safe people in their lives. People that will just be with them in limbo land. People who will just be with them and relate to them and love them and serve them right where they are, accept them as they are where they are, and walk with them where they are. So if you can do that, and by the way, all of us need safe people. If we don't have safe people in our life, we need to find a couple. But frankly, the best way to find a safe person is to be one. The safer you are, the more you'll recognize other safe people. Now, what's a safe person? Well, we don't try to fix other people. We don't give advice that hasn't been asked for. We pursue being good listeners. We don't have an agenda for anybody else's life. We simply meet people where they are, as they are, and walk with them in their stuff. In other words, we love them. We don't do it perfectly. We stumble all over ourselves and fail miserably, but then we get back up and love them as best we can. As we do that, we become more and more safe. And as that happens, safe people find us, and we find them.
Well, that's pretty profound, because even in our men's group, there's a whole underlying current there that we're there for each other, but we're not there to actually fix the other guy. Uh-huh. Get into the psychology or the theories or anything like that.
You know, and they want us to fix it. And, you know, oh, guys listening in, if you have a lady in your life, one of the most important questions you can ask her is when she starts to share with you a problem, ask her this question. So, do you want my advice or do you want me to just listen?
There you go. That's a good, yeah, I like
and
that.
And if they say just listen, then guys, don't give any advice. Just listen. Mm-hmm. But don't assume either one, because there's sometimes when our ladies are genuinely asking us to do something, to you know, give feedback or to give advice or to act on their behalf. A lot of the time, they are just sharing and just want us to listen. There is no way, gentlemen, no way for you to know, no way for me to know which one it is unless we ask.
That's pretty profound. That's really good. All right, so the affirmation for
Promoting peace is, I will promote peace. This is what I will do. Mm-hmm. And it comes from really, it's hard to do if we're not pursuing calm. That makes sense, right?
Yeah.
We pursue calm, we have a much better chance of promoting peace.
Yeah. Yep, I agree with that. It's a whole, you feel peaceful when you're calm.
Yes.
Can't help it.
Yes.
All right. Well, finally, we're down to number 7. Practice solid leadership. You know, how can you or we, you know, show leadership not only in a crisis but in a day-to-day relationships?
Yep. Good question. You know, some people say, "Well, I don't know. I'm not a leader." Well, let's just say from the beginning, my personal belief is that every person, unique in all of human history with a unique purpose, that means every person is a difference maker. The question is, you know, like we said before, what kind of difference are we going to make? Secondly, everyone is a leader. Everyone is exercising leadership all the time. Now, we might not call it leadership. We might call it influence. But influence really is leadership. Even if I'm mostly a follower. Even followers have followers. Even followers exercise influence. As followers exercise influence, even leaders can learn from followers, and followers can lead leaders, if that makes sense. So the first thing to recognize is just own up to the fact that you are a leader, you have influence, and therefore every day you are already exercising leadership. The issue is, what kind of leadership are we exercising? Now, when a person is in crisis, what happens is usually a pullback, is what I call it. They retreat. This would be one of the things. We've got a crisis. Okay, let's pull into the castle and pull up the drawbridge, right? We go into what I call fortress mode, because life is not what it was, but we don't know what it's going to be yet. And so we develop this sort of fortress mentality. And as we develop our fortress mentality, our world automatically shrinks. And as our world shrinks, that's where we get into issues like isolation, increased anxiety, increased fear, and increased depression. Now, if our world is shrinking, let's think about this for a minute. Fortress mentality, shrinking world on the one hand, but we've just said that we are hardwired for relationship, and life is all about people and making a difference, and life is all about serving and loving. We can quickly see, oh, that doesn't fit with fortress mentality. Oh, that doesn't fit with a shrinking world. And so practicing solid leadership just simply means, in the midst of daily life, that we are always engaged in this mixture of leading and following with all of those that we are around. And so we are constantly looking for ways to love and serve other people. As we do that, leadership is automatic. Even if you're quarantined, even if you're under shelter-in-place orders, we can do that in our own homes. We can do that with our own family. We can do that online. We are always exercising influence and leadership. So it's one of those, well, I'll just stop there for a minute.
Well, I mean, I like where you're going with that, and even individually. So if we're sheltered and we're all alone, I mean, we have a good friend of ours, just lost his wife, and he finally, and this is very recent, and he shared with my wife that he finally, you know, it hit him, you know, the grief hit him, and the cry, yep. and crying, and et cetera. And, you know, and it's just amazing how on an individual basis, we have a definite impact, not only on other people, but when we're even by ourselves, we affect ourselves. So where are we at with our emotions, and what are we looking at? Are we going deep in our heart? And so individually, we can actually lead ourselves out of depression.
Yes.
Just by following these principles. It's beautiful. I like the way you did this.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And so we're at the end here. What's this? What's the affirmation on this one?
The affirmation on this last one is pretty simple too. I will practice solid leadership and influence for good.
That's beautiful. And if I remember right, my computer just went off. It's in silent mode here. And but you have, I don't know if you have it in front of you on the PDF, there's, you have all the affirmations, I think, listed.
You know, I just pulled them up.
Oh, good. why don't we go through those real quick here?
You bet. I will pursue calm. I will protect and nurture my heart. I will practice reacting less and responding more. I will pursue personal wellness. I will pursue my purpose, love and serve. I will promote peace. I will practice solid leadership and influence for good.
Beautiful. Gary, I really want to thank you. This has been one of the best conversations that I've had in a long time. It's very heartwarming and inspirational for me. Do you do counseling too? Can people get some of that through your website?
Yes, I do, and it's specifically grief oriented, of course,
right.
And because it is via phone, we call it grief coaching. And yes is the answer to that. If you just go to my website at GaryRoe.com, again, the last name is R-O-E, and up at the top on the navigation bar, there will be a coaching tab, and you can click on that and learn more about it. It really begins with a free 15-minute consultation via phone because, you know, as I say it, you know, mentors in life, finding a good mentor is a lot like buying a pair of shoes. Of course, with guys, it's a little different, but we have to pretend, you know, with ladies, it's not. Sometimes you have to try on several pairs before you get one that'll fit, right?
Yep.
So the same is true with mentors, and I am not a good fit for everyone. But there will be people that, you know, resonate. You know, we kind of resonate. Those are just things that are out there that say, yep, there's a connection here that I don't experience elsewhere. And so, yes, I do offer that online. I also have a number of free resources available on my website. It's a resource tab at the top there. You might guess, James, that I'm really into relationship and building relationships. So people can feel free to email me. I have a commitment to read and respond to every email. My responses are usually pretty brief, and be patient with me. It takes me a couple of days usually to be able to get a response to people. But I'm certainly here to help because, goodness, we are all in this together. And I'm just so honored and thankful that I am alive and that I get to do what I do, because sometimes I think about my past and think, you know what? I should have been dead at 15. I should have been long gone by now, but I'm not. And that is a credit not to me so much as it is to God and all the people he's placed around me along the way.
Beautiful. Well, thanks for all your sharing, and appreciate it. We'll see if the future holds for us. Maybe I'd like to have you on the show again in the future. I don't know when, but that would be fantastic. We can discuss grieving and death. And
yes,
that would be a whole nother topic.
Tough stuff and very important.
Yes. All right, thank you. This is KGVM 95.9 FM on your dial, Bozeman, Montana. This is the Gallatin Community Public Service Radio. This is Jim Kozlik and the Men's Network Radio.